Okay, so today we're diving into a case that really gets to the heart of some tough questions about law, justice, and teenagers.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're looking at MLH v. State, the 2003 Indiana case.
From the Court of Appeals?
Right, and this one is all about when and how a juvenile, someone under 18, can end up on the sex offender registry, potentially for life.
And it brings up these big issues about, like, how do you balance public safety
Right.
with giving young people a chance to turn their lives around?
Right.
Like, how do you even measure the risk someone might reoffend, especially when they're still developing?
Especially when it's like a teenager.
Yeah.
So much is changing for them at that age.
Totally.
So, for everyone listening, think of this as like a crash course in MLH v. State and all the debates it sparked. We'll break it down in a way that even if you're not a legal expert,
Right.
you'll get why this case still matters.
Yeah, and we're working with a few different sources here.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us about those.
We've got some background on like how to approach these kinds of discussions. Then there's an analysis that digs into all the twists and turns of the case. And then, of course, we've got the standard case brief that lays out the MLH decision itself.
Okay, great. So let's start by mapping out the basics here. We're talking about a case that started in Indiana's juvenile court. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. It all began with allegations against MLH for some pretty serious conduct. We're talking about something that would have been a felony if he were an adult.
Okay.
So, based on that, the juvenile court decided he should be registered as a sex offender.
Wow. So even though it was in the juvenile system, the consequences could be really huge.
Yeah, long lasting for sure. But keep in mind, it was a juvenile court, so not an adult conviction. Still a big deal, though.
For sure. So then this initial decision, it didn't just stop there, right? That's where the Indiana Court of Appeals comes in.
Yeah.
What was their role in all this?
Yeah, so the Court of Appeals, they're like the next level up. They had to look at everything the juvenile court did, like, did they apply the law correctly? Was there enough evidence to justify putting him on the registry?
So they were double checking to make sure everything was by the book.
Exactly. And like making sure the process was fair.
Okay, I got it.
And well, in the end, they actually came to a different conclusion than the juvenile court.
Interesting. Okay, so what was the main sticking point for them? Like, what was the big legal issue they were debating?
So the crux of it was this idea of clear and convincing evidence.
Okay.
The Court of Appeals really honed in on whether the state had actually proven to that standard that MLH was likely to reoffend.
Clear and convincing evidence. I feel like we hear that phrase, but what does it actually mean in the courtroom? Like, how much proof do you need?
It's a good question. Like, it's obviously more than just a suspicion,
Right.
right?
Right. It can't just be a gut feeling.
No, not at all. But it's also not as strict as beyond a reasonable doubt, which is what you need for a criminal conviction.
Which is a much higher bar, right?
Much higher, yeah. So think of it like this. You've got preponderance of the evidence
Okay.
that's used a lot in civil cases, and it basically means something's more likely than not, like maybe a 51% chance.
Okay, so like tipping the scales just slightly.
Exactly. And then on the other end, you've got beyond a reasonable doubt in criminal cases. That's where you need to be, like 99% sure.
Right.
Clear and convincing falls somewhere in the middle. It means the evidence is strong enough to make you firmly believe something's true, but it doesn't have to erase every single doubt.
Okay, that helps a lot. So the standard of clear and convincing evidence, that was the key for deciding if MLH should be on the registry.
Exactly.
So remind us, what had he actually done? What were the facts that led to this whole thing?
So MLH was 17 when he pleaded guilty to child molesting.
Okay.
And like we said, even though this was handled in the juvenile system, the offense itself would have been a Class B felony if he was an adult.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So after his plea, he was put on probation, and he had to complete a sex offender treatment program at a place called Resolute.
Okay, so that seems like a pretty standard response, right? Like, get him the help he needs.
Yeah, you'd think completing that program would be a big step in the right direction.
Right.
But here's where it gets tricky.
Okay.
He finished the treatment, but the clinicians from Resolute and another doctor, Dr. Opstein, who was an expert witness,
Okay.
they all said they thought MLH was still a high risk to reoffend.
Really? So even after going through the program?
Yeah, and that's where this whole tension in the case comes from.
Yeah, that makes sense. So on the one hand, you've got him completing treatment like he's supposed to, but then you've got these professionals saying he's still dangerous.
It's a tough situation for sure.
Absolutely. So what exactly were the experts worried about? What were their reasons for saying he was high risk even after the treatment?
They were really focused on what they saw as MLH's lack of empathy for the victims
Okay.
And they said he didn't fully take responsibility for what he had done.
So more like his internal state.
Right, exactly. Like they felt like the treatment hadn't really changed something fundamental in him.
And that made them think he was still likely to commit another offense.
Yeah, and it raises this huge question about, like, can completing a program really outweigh what experts think about a juvenile's mindset?
So the court had to weigh that, right? The experts' opinions versus the fact that he finished treatment. And this all happened within the context of Indiana law, which is where things get even more complicated, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Indiana has some very specific laws about putting juveniles on the sex offender registry.
Okay, so break those down for us. What were the key parts of the law the court had to consider?
So the main ones here are Indiana Code Sections 11884.5C and 11885C.
Okay.
And these basically lay out the rules for when a juvenile can be placed on the registry.
Okay.
And really important, they say there has to be that clear and convincing evidence that the juvenile is likely to commit another sex offense.
Right, that standard we talked about before.
Exactly. And then the law also says the court has to consider four specific risk factors when they're making this decision.
Okay, what are those four factors?
So first, they look at whether the juvenile shows any empathy or remorse for the crime.
Okay.
Second, does the juvenile accept responsibility for what they did?
Got it.
Third, are they showing safe behaviors?
Meaning, like, not putting themselves in risky situations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then four, do they have a support system?
Yeah.
You know, people who can help them stay on track and prevent future offenses.
Makes sense. A lot to consider.
Yeah, definitely not a simple decision.
Not at all. All right, so let's get into the actual appellate court decision. We know Chief Judge Brooke wrote the majority opinion, and it sounds like they sided with the juvenile court, the one that said MLH should be on the registry.
Right.
So walk us through their reasoning. Why did they uphold that decision?
So Chief Judge Brooke and the majority, they put a lot of weight on what Dr. Offstein had to say.
The expert witness.
Yeah. They really focused on his assessment that MLH didn't seem to have much empathy.
Okay.
That he hadn't really taken responsibility for his actions.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Offstein even said he thought MLH had some traits that could point towards pedophilia.
Wow. Okay, so the majority was clearly persuaded by that expert testimony.
Yeah, they seemed to think it was pretty strong evidence. And they also emphasize this idea of deference to the trial court.
Meaning what?
Basically, that the trial court was the one who actually saw all the evidence firsthand. You know, they were in the courtroom.
Right.
They saw MLH in person. They heard all the testimony.
Okay.
So the majority felt like the appeals court should give a lot of weight to the trial court's findings about MLH's risk.
Okay, interesting. So now we know there was a dissenting opinion written by Judge Baker.
Right.
And it sounded like he had a very different take on the whole thing.
He did.
What were his main arguments against putting MLH on the registry?
So Judge Baker really zeroed in on this question of empathy. He said it's just too subjective, too hard to measure accurately.
Like, how can you say for sure how much empathy someone has?
Right. And he argued that you can't use it as clear and convincing evidence of future risk, which is what the law requires.
Okay, I see his point.
Yeah, it is hard to, like, quantify empathy.
Absolutely. What else did Judge Baker bring up?
He pointed to a few things that he thought actually made MLH look less risky.
Okay, like what?
Well, the fact that he had followed all the rules of his probation.
Right.
That he had completed the treatment program.
Okay.
And he also brought up the fact that, in general, juvenile sex offenders are actually less likely to reoffend than adults.
That's a good point. I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, teenagers are still figuring things out.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, to Judge Baker, it seemed like the state hadn't really met that high bar of clear and convincing evidence.
Okay.
He seemed to think that MLH's actions, like finishing treatment and following probation, should matter more than the expert's opinion about what was going on in his head.
Yeah, I mean, actions speak louder than words, right?
That seems to be what Judge Baker was getting at. And he even had this great line in his dissent. He said, "In my view, a juvenile should not be deemed an offender simply because he is not hangdog enough for the court."
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
He's basically saying it shouldn't be about how much they appear to be remorseful, right? It should be about their actual behavior.
Exactly. And he also pointed out that even Dr. Offstein, the expert, had admitted that empathy is very difficult to measure.
Yeah, so even the expert acknowledges that it's not an exact science.
Right. There's a lot of interpretation involved.
So we've got these two very different perspectives in the decision. Stepping back, what are the bigger implications here? What does MLH v. State teach us about the challenges of this area of law?
I think this case really exposes that fundamental tension between the state's need to keep people safe,
right,
and the goal of rehabilitating young offenders, helping them become productive members of society.
Yeah, it's not an easy balance to strike.
Not at all. And it's especially hard with juveniles because they're still developing. Their personalities, their behavior, it's all in flux.
Right. So predicting future risk is even trickier with them.
Exactly. And that leads to so many questions. Like, how much can we really trust these risk assessments when it comes to juveniles?
Right.
What factors should matter most? Should it be their past behavior or how well they do in treatment?
Mm-hmm.
Or should we be trying to assess these internal things like empathy?
Yeah. All really tough questions.
And the whole issue of proof comes up, too. You know, how do you prove to a clear and convincing standard that someone is likely to reoffend, especially when that prediction is based on something as subtle as empathy?
Yeah, that seems almost impossible.
It's incredibly challenging.
I mean, you can't just look inside someone's head and see what they're thinking or feeling.
Exactly.
And like our sources pointed out, if we say a lack of empathy is enough to put someone on the registry, does that mean we're pathologizing normal teenage behavior?
Right, like teenagers are known for being a little self-centered sometimes.
Right, yeah. Where's the line between that and something truly dangerous?
It's a blurry line, for sure.
Absolutely. And I think Judge Baker's dissent also highlights this tension, right? He was really concerned about putting too much emphasis on these subjective interpretations of a juvenile's emotions.
Yeah, he was really pushing for more concrete evidence.
And he seemed to think that if a juvenile is actually doing the work, like completing treatment and staying out of trouble,
right,
that should count for more than some experts' doubts about their internal state.
Yeah, like their actions should speak louder than any perceived lack of empathy.
It really makes you think about how we judge these things, especially when the stakes are so high.
It's a huge responsibility, and there's a lot of room for error. And especially with juveniles, you have to think about the impact these decisions have on their whole lives.
Exactly. I mean, being on the sex offender registry can affect where you live, where you work, your relationships.
It can really limit your options in life. And the thing is, we're talking about young people who are still growing and changing.
Right. So we have to be really careful about labeling them and making assumptions about their future.
Absolutely.
I mean, you also have to consider, is this expert testimony truly objective?
It's a good question. Like, the material we looked at pointed out that Dr. Ofstein said MLH lacked intellectual awareness of his actions.
Okay.
But is that really a clinical observation, or is it more of a moral judgment?
Right. That's tricky. It's hard to separate those sometimes.
It is.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive, what would you say is the main takeaway from MLH v. State?
I think it boils down to this. Finding the right balance between protecting the public,
right,
and giving young offenders a genuine chance to turn their lives around, that's incredibly hard.
Yeah, it's not easy.
And it's even harder when you're dealing with these subjective assessments of things like empathy.
Right, because how do you measure that? How do you say for certain that someone lacks it to a degree that justifies such a serious consequence?
Exactly. And the different opinions in this case, the majority and the dissent, they really show how much disagreement there can be about this.
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes this case so important for our listeners to think about.
Oh, yeah.
Because it raises so many questions that we're still grappling with today.
For sure.
Like, how much weight should we give to these expert opinions? Mm-hmm. Should we be focusing more on what the juvenile is actually doing, how they're behaving?
Right.
And what does it really mean to say that someone is likely to reoffend, especially when they're young and still developing?
It's a lot to ponder. But I think it's crucial that we keep having these conversations.
I agree. It's about finding that balance between protecting the community and recognizing that young people have the potential to change and grow.
Exactly.
And that's something we need to be mindful of as we're making these decisions with such huge consequences for their lives. So, everyone listening, as you go about your day, think about MLH and what it means for how we approach juvenile justice, how we assess risk, and how we ultimately balance those competing goals of public safety and rehabilitation. What do you think the right balance is? It's not an easy question, but it's one worth thinking about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Thanks for having me.